Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School and the clinic director at the Premier Center in Santa Monica, where he treats many famous names in Hollywood under nationally recognized Premier Labs owner and CEO Dr. Robert Marshall. Got a health question? Ask Dr. Medici live today on Straight Talk on Health. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning. Here we are. Thank you for staying on another hour. You get the show live that way. I think it's always better to do that than the recorded shows on the archives. Here we go. Breast cancer. We're going to go after it today from what you might think is left field, but in my mind, this should be standard medicine. How do we understand breast cancer? 1 out of 8 women will get it. 1 out of 36 women will die from it. Thousands of mastectomies each year. And even if you're fortunate enough, in a sense, if you've just got the lump and they take out the lump and that's the end of it, that's invasive and that's traumatic in and of itself. Question to you, my friends. The obvious question, why the breast? Why is breast cancer the number two cause of cancer in women? Skin cancer being number one today. Why is it the breast? Why isn't it your bone? Why isn't it your pancreas? Why isn't it your brain? Why isn't it your kidney? By the way, has anybody ever heard of heart cancer? Heart cancer. Why doesn't the heart get cancer? That's the most important question for you. And if you can understand that, and you will after 60 minutes of this show, you'll understand what to do about it. So once again, education. How many women live in fear of that? How many women seem to think it's a familial thing? My mother got it, my sister got it, my aunt got it, and therefore I have to be concerned. Why the breast? I'm going to give you two statements, two words. The first word is fat, and the second word is structure. Fat and structure. Isn't this a wacky show? What's typical about breast cancer? It begins by chelating, bonding poisons to the fat in the breast. What is fat? Well, we can understand this from the standpoint of dissection. Or liposuction. If you take your average American and liposuction out all their fat and take that fat and put it and subject it to various types of spectroscopic centrifuges, different type of chemical analyses, electrophoresis, so on and so forth, and you analyze the fat in an average American, you're going to find that that fat concentrates many, many, many times the number of poisons, pesticides, all the carcinogens. All the fat-soluble carcinogens are concentrated in the fat, and that includes your breast fat. Now, we need breast fat. That's what gives the breasts that lovely feel. That's what gives the breast that lovely contour. But into that fat go the carcinogens. That's really big. Well, common sense will tell you the lung will get it and the large intestine will get it. Why? Because they're interfacing directly with the exogenous poison, meaning the lung gets hit with the air and there's garbage in the air. Bada boom. That's common sense. So no wonder lung cancer is way up there in the chart and not kidney cancer. How does the carcinogen get to the cell of the kidney? It's not easy if you understand the anatomy. How does the carcinogen even get to the cell of the brain? It's not that easy. But how does the carcinogen get to the fat of the breast? It's simple. How does it get to the fat in the bone marrow? It's simple. So understand this about the breast. It's a sitting duck. So fat. Now let's add something to fat. Let's add the word estrogen dominant. That means this. On and in the cells of the breast, not the fat cells, but the glandular cells of the breast, are little binding sites for estrogen. And when women get estrogen-sensitive breast cancer, it means that the DNA inside the cell of the glandular tissue of the breast is stimulated. It's spoken to by something that binds to the estrogen receptors on the surface of the cell. What they don't tell you is, and where all the hysteria comes from, is it's not so much your estrogen, your good estrogen, the stuff that comes out of your ovary estrogen. It's the estrogen in the filthy cheese that you ate. It's the estrogen in the meat that you ingested that wasn't from a clean animal. It's all the super estrogens that all your cows, making your dairy, making your meats, are injected with so they get to slaughter that much faster. It's all the estrogen in the milk that you drink and the ice cream that you eat. The cow, remember, is sitting there in the dark stall, Häagen-Dazs ice cream. The cow is sitting in the dark closet. And they take the baby cow and they make it an adult really fast. They inject it with a variety of terrible chemicals. So if I was going to get appropriately graphic, we can turn it from a two-year-old into a pubescent animal really fast. And this speeds up production. And the animal produces more milk, more cream. And that's what we want. The problem is the chemicals that we inject the animal with are toxic to the animal. And the animal knows it. And so what does the animal do? It excretes these chemicals into the cream and the milk. And so we make our ice creams, et cetera, et cetera, our cheeses on pizza from these very toxic estrogenic sources. And those estrogens go into you. And those estrogens combine with your estrogens. Now you become the estrogen bomb. And all the feedback loops in the body that prevent initiation of growth of tissue go and run amok. Meaning they go out of balance. Meaning you take enough toxic estrogen into a body that's already making a lot of estrogen, into a body that knows how to grow tissue. Those breasts are a little bigger. Those lips are a little thicker. Those hips are a little wider. Those periods are a little bit more clotty. Those breasts, and we'll get to this later, are a little more cystic. And that type of person, especially the estrogen-dominant female, that naturally grows things, more naturally under these conditions, grows a little tumor. It can be benign, and it can be malignant. So we have this estrogen issue. Thus, we have the estrogen-receptive breast cancer, not just in estrogen-dominant or estrogenic females, in any type of a female. But you understand the point. The word estrogen dominant means your body grows things with estrogen, and it's ready to do so. So what do we have in American society today? We have a very estrogen proliferative culture. Cystic ovaries. Endometriosis. Very painful periods. All that acne in our teenagers. All that adult acne. The body doesn't know what to do with it all. Now, where does that estrogen live? It lives in fat. estrogen, which is cholesterol-based, in other words, the base chemical to estrogen, as well as testosterone, as well as progesterone, is cholesterol. You didn't know that. The liver makes the cholesterol, and then other things are added to it, and the hormone in particular is turned into whatever hormone it is, whether it's cortisol from the adrenal gland or estrogen from the ovary or testosterone from the testes. But once done, that estrogen mixes with fat. It's lipophilic. It is fat. So where is it going to hang out? Where would the body put toxic estrogen in the fat? So you've got this estrogen-dominant fat relationship that you have to understand about the breast. Now here's the clincher, structure. Again, we're discussing chemistry. Now we're switching to structure. You're out there. You want to understand how to reduce your risks, understand fat, and understand estrogen dominance. And understand now you've got to go outside nutrition to really get the clincher on the breast. The clincher on the breast is position. So let's understand what happens as the fat inside the breast gets more and more toxic as the body brings more chemicals to the fat of the breast. Well, what it's supposed to do, what the body's designed to do, is drain that toxic fat out of the breast through the lymph. What it's supposed to do is drain that toxic fat out of the breast through the gallbladder. So both the lymph and the gallbladder have to be working. And if you listen to this show, when we say the gallbladder's working, it means you have to spray bile. You have to be patent through your biliary system. And those of you who are tuning in today, just check some of the shows on liver and gallbladder so you understand that statement. Don't think that since you're educated enough to understand that the gallbladder and the breast have a relationship, that simply doing a mindless gallbladder cleanse is enough. You have to get to biliary patency. If you do, there's dividends, and we'll discuss those later. But that fat will drain out via the biliary system. That fat will drain out via the lymph. But something happens positionally to the breast tissue as you age. And that shift in position has to do with the fact that the pectoralis minor. So now we're going to talk about your pectoralis muscles. Those are your breast muscles. Ladies, if you lift the arm up in the air and you grab and you go into the axillary area, the armpit, and you move towards the center line, you're going to feel this stringy, deep muscle. Stringy and deep. And that stringy, deep muscle is called the pectoralis minor. The pectoralis minor is under the pectoralis major. Easier to see on guys, of course. Those big things they like to grow, right? The weightlifters. That breast muscle is the pec major. That's not what we're talking about. Underneath that muscle, which you can feel if you lift your arm, if you're lying on your back and you lift your arm over your head and you go into the armpit and then move towards the center line, you'll be able to feel this stringy muscle. It's a line of tight muscle. And that pec minor is a structural muscle. When that muscle gets tight and short, which it will because we don't stretch it, when that muscle gets tight and short, it internally rotates your shoulders. So the tips of your shoulders, as you age, start to come together and come forward. And we all understand that. That's those postural shifts as we age that we may associate also with a dowager's hump, that little hump in the back that we all don't want. Because the head's coming forward. Because the scalenes, another set of muscles in the front of the neck, are pulling short and tight. So ladies, get this straight. As you age, the pec minor becomes short, and the tips of your shoulder start to come forward and rotate inwardly. As the scalenes, those muscles in the front of the neck, become short and tight, your head comes forward. And of course, you tilt your head backwards to compensate. But you're starting to collapse then into the neck and into the top of the chest. You're starting to collapse and bend forward. And once that happens, so let's get that picture straight. Your straight back, that thoracic area, the mid-back, starts to arch forward. And we call that a kyphosis. It's what you don't want. The head comes forward and starts to develop that dowager's hump, which you don't want. And that's because those scalenes in the front of the neck pull tight. And then the pec minor, the deep breast muscle, pulls short. And you've got the picture now. And so I beg you to understand, what do you think happens to the drainage capacities of the toxic fat of the breast? What happens to the drainage capacities of that toxic fat in the breast once you've crushed your upper body like that? You got it. It goes away. It seriously reduces its ability. That's a big deal. And if you track it and you trace it, over the years, those breasts get denser. They get more fibrotic. If you're touching them, of course, all the fixation is on the nipple. Men tend to go straight for the nipple. The nipple gets too much emphasis, and the breast tissue, or under the armpit as you age, gets no attention whatsoever. And we'll get to that stigma in a moment. So what you have is a intense structural compression of a very important area. What you have then is a intense defect in the drainage capacity of the breast. So the arteries, the blood flow under high pressure, right? Arterial pressure is higher. Pump that blood into the breast. Doesn't matter. It goes right through the structural issues. It's not perfusion you have a problem with. It's not the perfusion or the feeding of the toxic blood into the breast that suffers. It's the drainage, because drainage occurs under low pressure. Drainage occurs under low pressure. So when you turn the shower on, there's high perfusion, meaning the water comes out. But then that little drain over there, it's got a drain. And that's what happens with the body. That drain doesn't work so well. Perfusion is always bigger than drainage. Do you know, if that wasn't so imbalanced, we'd reduce all disease immeasurably. If you were to be given two gallbladders, if you were to be given double the lymphatic system, if you were to be given double the venous system, we'd shift the balance more in favor of drainage, so it could compete with perfusion. And then what was in the blood would never have enough time, really, to bioaccumulate in the breast tissue, in the fat. So let's understand this word drainage. What the breast loses is its ability to drain what's perfusing into the fatty tissue. And so we bioaccumulate. And little by little by little, the concentration of garbage in the fat around the glandular tissue hits critical mass, and finally, the mutations begin. So, remember gallbladder. Now, lymph. When we say lymph, we say sweat. That means if the body's not sweating, it's not moving lymph correctly. So don't be myopic about lymph. What do you do for lymph? Take lymphatic drainage remedies. Okay, That's a fair argument. Get lymphatic massage. That's a fair argument. But save money, guys. Move your body. Sweat. If you're sweating, you're moving lymph. If you're not sweating, it's not happening. Now, we mentioned gallbladder. We won't overwork that issue. That means if you want to keep the breast clean, it means when you do those flushes, coffee enemas included, it means you're going to see bile come out of your body. When you do those olive oil flushes, you're going to see nothing but yellow-green liquid come out of your body. And if that doesn't happen, it may be every month for a year before it does, but you must get the biliary system patent if you want to make sure you heavily reduce your chances of getting sick. This is the real stuff, my friends. Make sure you take it straight. Now, I'm going to bring another concept in. And that concept has to do with perfusion, meaning mobility through the thoracic ribcage. Mobility through the ribcage. Now, what does that mean? Well, we're going to connect health of the breast now, meaning perfusion and drainage, to another concept called breath. Breath. And unless breath is understood, unless breath is sequenced out correctly, unless breath hits critical mass, and I'll explain that. Those of you in the holistic community, breath is life. Every system that teaches health talks about breath, deep, invigorating breath. Let's turn this into something better. In child rearing, moms learn Lamaze. Lamaze is belly breath. Every system that teaches breath teaches you singing. If you watch an opera singer, an opera star, note that the belly kind of sticks out. You know why? The diaphragm is open. I think that's the best way to attach you guys to the concept. Think of your average operatic. When they relax their abdomen, their belly pops out. That's a functional sign. That is an undeniable, indisputable sign that the diaphragm is what we call open. That the person really and truly understands how to perfuse with breath. That's a big deal. Because when that belly comes out, it allows the diaphragm to come down. And as the diaphragm comes down, the thoracic spine, meaning the part of the spine that as you age hunches over, inverts the other way. It means that the thoracic spine, as the belly comes out and the diaphragm comes down, starts to arch the other way, the opposite direction of the overfold or the kyphosis or the hunchback, the opposite direction it goes as the belly comes out, as the diaphragm comes down. So you got that visual. And as your mid-back is arching, as you're taking that deep breath, the rib cage starts to expand. The rib cage starts to expand, and as the rib cage expands in the correct sequencing of the breath, you're going to get drainage under the armpit and out of the breast. So there's a whole relationship then between circulating lymph and draining through the venous system that relates to the correct type of a breath, that relates to patency through the biliary system. That relates to stretching so that the pec minor starts to lengthen. Stretching so that the hump in the back starts to come out the other way. So we've got a structural issue. We've got something to finesse with breath. That structural issue is about stretching the pec minor, the thoracics. We've got the chemical issue, draining through the gallbladder. And now we get to the liver. The liver. In other forms of medicine, what's behind a malignant tumor in the breast is blood stasis, heavily related to the liver. Now, why is that? Well, understand this. All the toxic estrogen, before it goes to the fat, where does it go? It goes to the liver. The body won't dump it in the fat because it really wants to pull it out through the liver and then into the gallbladder. Now, the biliary system is one way to measure efficiency in the liver, but we're not talking about that right now. What we're talking about is the coagulability or the hypercoagulability of blood through the liver, meaning liver blood stasis. Liver blood stasis. How thick is your blood? Now, you know that. And the reason you know that is because for years now, I hope, or for at least since this show started, I hope, you understand that your period, if you're still having a period, or even if you're not, how was your period at one time? Meaning, did you clot? The woman that clots, the woman that has pain during her period, the woman that clots during her period, the woman that passes out during her period, the woman that just couldn't wait for that period to end every single month, is the woman that's going to congest up in the breast tissue. Why is that? Because all the chemical effects of the estrogenic chemicals should be taken out through the liver. So the breast and the fat in the breast never get them. But when that doesn't happen, you can measure that effectively by the quality of the period. Because the period, when it gets thick like that, and when it gets painful like that, is simply a measure of the liver's inability to denature their toxic estrogens. So every single month you make estrogen. Some of you make more estrogen than others. And those estrogens go into the cell and they trigger protein synthesis, and that's good. It gives you your muscles, keeps your skin tight, makes your lips a little thicker, it makes the breasts a little perkier. It gives you all the good things we associate with estrogen. In the male world, that's testosterone, right? We understand that, right? Estrogen is basically testosterone for men. So that estrogen, as it goes into the cell, triggers protein synthesis. When it's done triggering protein synthesis, it becomes a poison. A poison in the sense that the body has to get rid of that now. Question is can the body get rid of it fast enough? And the answer to that is not if your liver is congested. Not if all the things that make the liver function, like a good biliary system, like the B vitamins, like that the liver has been fed enough amino acid, like anything you associate with a healthy liver, if that liver doesn't denature those estrogens, those now used up toxic estrogens, those estrogens do harm in the body. If you add to that all the toxic estrogens from garbage eating, then you clot during your period. No good. But here's the point. Somebody like that is going to congest in the breast. We're not making that connection. When you're 50 or 60 and you're thinking about who am I in this span of breast cancer, we're not thinking that, gee, when I was 30, my periods were always clotted. And nobody told me that that makes me a bit more prone. This is what we're missing. Again, I'm laying down perceptions, insight strategies, and other medicines are very powerful and very true and very understood. But not in the general way we understand medicine today. Our understanding of why women get breast cancer is limited. We have some idea what to do about it once you get it. But to make sure your body puts the breast in an environment that won't mutate it, well, that one we are not getting. And it's just common sense. When you listen to this show, when you turn your friends onto this show at straighttalk.cc, when you take some of these perceptions to your medical doctors, understand that this is the guts of a thought process in the root of science. And that's not what you're getting in the hospitals. That's not what you're getting in your doctor's office. And you know that. But I want you to be steadfast when it really counts. And it really counts when these issues abound, when you have true concerns. So look at this. We're talking about a structural issue as a driver of what creates the right or wrong environment. We're talking about the chemical issue. Now let's go a little bit into the psyche around the breast. First of all, the breast does not get touched enough. The nipple does, not the breast. Worse yet, under the armpit becomes a place we don't like to go because of all the needless to mention issues about what goes on under the armpit as we age, especially. So we go from the slender, circulating, flexible, draining, perfusing youth under the armpit into internally rotated, fibrotic, toxic, untouched areas under the armpit and to the side of the breast. And in that transition from the teenage years and the 20s into the 50s becomes the environment that makes the cell more toxic. That's the way you have to think about this. And then we add insult to injury by doing what? We throw the bra on. It's not bad enough. We are structurally degenerating. That the carcinogens are bioaccumulating in the fat of the breast. That the breast isn't being touched. The underarm isn't being explored anymore. Now we add the bra. Often we add the metal bra. And I think it's no news to you that you ought to burn the metal bra. But understand, if you haven't, between the metal making drainage more stagnant and the metal, what? Drawing radiation off the computer into that area. Now we're radiating the breast on top of structurally compressing it. On top of never touching it. Now you start to see how the picture sets itself up for trouble. On top of which, we hear things like fibrocystic disease, lumpy breasts. And we don't want lumpy breasts aesthetically. But the bottom line is, it's more than aesthetics. Now, if you ask your doctor, are the lumps in my breast cysts? And your doctor says yes. And the gut of you wants to know if that's potentially a condition more associated to cancer, statistically speaking. Your doctor will tell you that no, there's no incidence between an increase in breast cancer and fibrocystic disease. You got to understand there's a broader view on that. You got to understand that what they'll do to give you that statistic is they'll take a group of people with cysts and a group of people without cysts. And they'll look at the incidence of cancer in the group of people with cysts and compare it to the incidence of cancer in the group of people without cysts. And since that incidence is about the same, they'll tell you that cysts don't mean cancer. where that's myopic and where you have to understand the problem with studies like this is that what they're not doing is taking all the people with cancer of the breast. And long before they got cancer, 10 years before, 15 years before, subjecting that breast to what you're going to start subjecting it to, constant palpatory analysis, constant palpatory analysis, meaning you're going to touch your breasts. Your husband, significant other, is going to touch your breasts. If you don't have that, ladies, you may have daughters, you may have sisters, and you're going to touch each other's breasts. You're going to touch your own breast. You're going to start from the armpit to the side of the breast, to the nipple, to the whole thing. You're going to start to get really skilled at feeling the breast tissue. Because I guarantee you this, this I know, that before you got cancer at 60 or 50 or 70, there was a time when if somebody palpated that breast tissue, really worked gently but deeply into the breast tissue, really let it move through the fingers. In your teenage years, before those children, before you're in your 20s, before those children, those breasts were silky smooth. It's not about there were no cysts and then there are marble-sized cysts. That's a nonsense sort of an indice. That is a gross indice. Gross meaning very, very visible indice. Not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about those teenage breasts. Ladies, think about it. Some of you know what I'm talking about. There was a time when that breast tissue, it was like butter. It was like silk. You could run it through your fingers. There was no congestion. There was no mattedness to it. I guarantee you, when women get breast cancer, that silkiness, that fluidity, that tone that just told you there was health there is gone. Somewhere along the line, it becomes matted. It becomes congested. When you pull the breast tissue, there's a thickness to it. There may be even pain in it. You can feel tissues getting congested. That is not an impossibility for the layman if they just learn to get in touch with the breast. So part of your job then, right? Part of your job becomes, how do you take a breast tissue from a thick, congested, sort of fibrotic, but that doesn't have to mean marbles. See that word fibrocystic disease? Some women get marbles in their breast. Anybody could touch them and go, wow, it's like a million marbles in there, little peas in there. That's bad enough. Get rid of those. Remember, the study is often run incorrectly. It's what percentage of people with cystic disease get cancer and what percentage of people without cystic disease get cancer. And if they're about the same, we say cysts don't make a difference. It's very different than looking at all the women with cancer in the breast and noting that over a period of 10, 20, 30 years, those breasts were getting more congested. Now, we're not pointing fingers. I mean, how do you even run that in a study? But get out there in the field long enough. Get out there 10 years, 20 years, 30 years. Ask yourselves questions as a therapist, as a doctor, as a massage therapist even. What's really going on there? And much will hit your common sense. And again, one of the themes in this show is to use your common sense. I will always cite cigarettes and a million other things we're doing today as really the example of when science exceeds your common sense. Science does not have a right to exceed what your soul tells you is the truth. It doesn't. And yet I watch more people bend to the man in the white suit each day than I'd like to think. Don't let anybody do that. Spoke to a woman this week. They took the uterus and they convinced her to take both ovaries. There was no reason to take both ovaries. Ladies, if any doctor ever tells you, because you have an estrogen receptive breast cancer, to take your ovaries, I ask you to ask them to show you what study out there will confirm that after you get a mastectomy and a breast cancer and chemo and radiation, that taking your ovaries will significantly, more than 1%, improve your chances of never having a metastasis. Before you take your ovaries, ask them to show you multiple studies confirming that. And if they can't do it, then challenge them. Do not let anybody in an estrogen receptive breast cancer take your ovaries. It doesn't make sense. Remove the toxic estrogens, yes. Open up the bile ducts, yes. Move the lymph, what you have left of it, yes. But take the ovaries, again, it's another thing that doesn't make sense that we do. Next issue. The markers for cancer. The CA-125. There is a whole host now of markers out there. And they're debatable in their significance. Meaning, if you're taking blood tests, the CA-125, there's a bunch of them to determine whether or not you're about to get a cancer. Understand that there's a lot of false negatives associated with that. It means you may not see a rise in that chemical until you're more than comfortably along your way with a cancer. So even though we tend to think that the blood markers are more sensitive, and in some respects, yeah, they are, understand that often you're going to see nothing in the CA-125. Blood markers are a great idea. Hopefully we'll refine them to points where we can find proofs. But if you really get in to the way the body works, by the time you're going to see it in the blood, it's going to be growing in the tissue too long. Which brings us to, then, the tests. So let's just say a word about the mammogram. The mammogram is good on many levels. Because if it sees something, it's there. The problem with the mammogram is not the false positive. Meaning, if the mammogram says something's there, something's there. Look at it. Figure out what that is. The problem with the mammogram are false negatives. Much more common are false negative issues with testing. So the mammogram can give you a false negative, meaning it says you're fine, and yet you've got a tumor, a malignancy growing. So I would never say to somebody, don't do your mammogram. I'd say to somebody, if you do your mammogram and it's negative, do a more thorough test. And that's the thermography. Now, the problem with thermography, which is an inflammation or heat sensitive form of testing, it's not the false negative, it's the false positive. The only thing the thermogram is really finding is an increase in the inflammatory process. Which is a really good thing to know in the breast. Because before you get a malignancy, you're going to have an increase in an inflammatory process. That's the pathogenesis of a malignancy, meaning that's the pathway, chemically speaking. And if you've got a tool to determine whether or not that tissue is in an enhanced inflammatory state, you have a very powerful tool. Problem is that people want black and white. I went to the thermographer, and guys, a lot of MDs do thermography. Look it up. You've got a lot of medical doctors doing thermography. But understand, thermography will give you a false negative. So you have to put up with that. You have to put up with the anxiety of having somebody find inflammation in breast tissue, and then the period of time between the time they find it and then the time they find out it's nothing. It's congestion in the breast. If you really want an inside track on breast cancer, find yourself a really good thermographer. And have that thermographer know your breasts. So you have breast cancer in the family? And you're 50? You take your breast to a thermographer, and he gets a baseline. And every year, you get another baseline. And when we start to see a pro-inflammatory process begin, nail it. Turn it around. But look at that. That's big. Are you listening out there? That's big. Because if you turn it around, you're not going to get sick. Thermography is real. And the inflammatory cascade precedes all cancers. So you got it nailed with a good thermographer. They found something long before it's particularly dangerous. And if you couldn't control it, if it kept growing, you're going to nail it mammographically. You're going to nail it with the mammogram before it's too big. And that's the way you save most of the breast and certainly your very precious life. So let's run this backwards now. There you are, and you've had a lifetime of cystic ovaries. You've had a lifetime of painful breasts around your period. You've had a lifetime of endometriosis, so on and so forth. You've got some sense that you're estrogenic, or you've got breast cancer in your family. You've had two or three kids. And at 50 years old, you're noticing that from the side, you're not quite holding the gravity line like you used to, meaning the head's come a little forward, the shoulder's a little hunched, the mid-spine is a little hunched. Maybe you've been through a divorce. Hopefully you haven't. But either way, the breast isn't even being touched like it used to be. You haven't exercised in years. Your pectoralis minor muscles are shortened. Your scalenes are shortened. Your thoracic spine's a little bent forward. It's not too bad, but it's beginning. But by 60, it's going to be noticeable. By 60, maybe you've lost your girl. And you don't want to lose your girl. You want to have that zesty bounce in your body, that alignment of a teenager, which you can have, which you can keep, which you can get back, but you don't have it. The gallbladder's never been flushed. Understanding how to move bile is not in your vocabulary. You don't sweat, which means the lymph don't work. You're no stranger to toxic cheeses and ice creams. We'll keep the sugars for another discussion. The hormones in the meats you eat, doesn't matter, chicken, beef, turkey, lamb, they're all filled with hormone unless you've taken the steps. And all those stressors begin to create an inflammatory state around the breast tissue. And then with a little bit of genetic predisposition, just a little bit of genetic predisposition, that very fine glandular tissue finds itself in a fatty, toxic swamp of chemicals that it cannot drain away from the cell. And then one day, boom, it begins. Now, if you're going to get that lump, my strong advice to you is get it cut out immediately. Do not wait with that. Do not think that holistic medicine will come to your rescue there. I wish I could say otherwise. I truly do. But my experience sometimes is that people have blind faith in holistic medicine. And until I see holistic medicine consistently get rid of these lumps in the breast, get rid of them before they spread. Yes, that allopathic saying, early detection is the key. You bet early detection is the key. Do not be afraid of it, please. It's traumatic, but lots of women will get that little lump cut out, do the standard of care, get healthy, and never see the cancer again. As cancers go, cancer's always bad, but as cancers go, a lumpectomy's not that bad. It's not that disfiguring, and statistically, it has a very low rate of return. If you get it early, when you get into the lymph, things get complicated. But before we get there, if you fit the category, and many of you do, you're going to have to stretch the pecs. Until what? Until you stretch to the point where you can feel the shoulder align, which means it goes back into place naturally. Check out my shows on stretching and alignment. You're going to open your breath. And opening your breath simply means that when the belly comes out, if it does on you, if it doesn't, you've got to learn. And as the belly comes out, the diaphragm comes down. And as the diaphragm comes down, that dome inside your body that you don't have relationship with, as that diaphragm comes down, think of the opera singer. The thoracic spine starts to arch, not in the hunchback direction, out of the hunchback direction. And at some point, the rib cage will start to stretch. And having relationship with breath on that level will help drain the toxic fat around the breast into the lymph and into the gallbladder. And since you've done those gallbladder flushes and you have patency through the bile system, and since you sweat, we can be assured that both lymph and bile are moving, that you're enhancing drainage through breath, that you're enhancing drainage because you're structurally aligned, and you're going to be palpating those breasts. You're going to palpate them, or your significant other is going to palpate them, and you're going to touch them with your arms over your head, up under the armpit, into the side of the breast, touching the nipple, but also the breast, pulling the breast, toggling the breast, having a relationship with the underarm, having a relationship with the breast so that it feels good, so that you feel a warm circulation into the tissue. And once a week, you're going to add a castor oil pack under the arm and to the side of the breast, a castor oil pack, because the fat from the oil will help mix into the fat of the breast and clean it. And if you feel enough circulation into that breast tissue, it means the electrical field of the breast is changing. The electrical field of the breast is changing. When you feel the electrical feel of the breast change, it's like the breast is coming to life again. And that's the way you lived as a teenager. As those breasts bud, as you matured into your adolescence, as you saw a life ahead of you filled with beautiful dreams becoming true, those breasts grew. But now you're 60, and maybe some of those dreams have been broken. You have sadnesses, as all of us do. And my point to you is that breast has taken the beating, because that breast was a beacon at one time. It was a beacon of things to come. Think about that. Think about maturation. Think about your feminine. Think of what those breasts mean. Of course you think about what they mean. Or isn't breast augmentation the single biggest surgery in the world today? Or one of them? So understand that there's another perception of how to electrify the breast, of how to bring it back to life, and you'll know it when you do it. Drain the lymph, drain the bile, stretch the pecs, open the breath, get the breast touched until you feel circulation come into it, till its tone begins to enhance, till you start to look and feel like you did when you really believed your dreams could come true. That is the ultimate rehab for the breast. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. Listen to this show again and make sure you turn your friends onto it. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. And the best part? You can call in live with your health questions every week. For those of you still holding for Dr. Medici, stay on hold. He'll continue to answer calls for as long as it takes. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. And remember, to contact his office for an appointment, call Rachel or Johanna at 310-320-1132. That's 310-320-1132. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.